Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Ilona Europa, Accent on LA Talk Radio, Accent on London edition. I'm in London. Our guest is in LA. It's really, really, this is funny because a year and a half ago I was in Los Angeles. Now I'm talking to person who was born originally in Poland, similar to me. But yes, you are sitting in your beautiful library and you are enjoying sun probably. And obviously we see you very, very nicely suntan. So I would like to say to you, hi, Jerzy Gregorek. You are my guest for today.
Thank you, Ilona. Thank you for inviting me. I have, of course, my accent with me, right? And I am today near San Francisco, actually. So I have two places, like in LA and mostly now near San Francisco.
No, that's really, really cool. I love San Francisco too. So you are the lucky one. And I know that you love also Europe, but you know, your life story is just ready to be made into the movie. So
I really
hope somebody will listen, somebody will watch our interview. And remember, if they will give you a proposition, I want to be part of this movie.
Okay. Oh, of course.
So, Jerzy, if, like 2 months ago, your wonderful wife wrote to me a short message on Facebook, and she introduced me, you and your life story and your family life story. And I thought this would be amazing, very, very interesting interview. Seems like you both are wonderful couple. Your wife and name is Aniela. You also have a daughter, yes, Natalia.
Right.
Seems like your life was very, very not easy and filled with a lot of dramatic pauses. And then something great was happening that moved your life into a very, very successful journey, which you enjoy this journey till this day. So, Jerzy, I would like you to tell us your life story, especially the years in Poland and way, how did you get into USA? In years that they were very, very not easy in Europe. So please, can you continue?
Sure. Do you want the short version or the long version?
You know what? We have 50 minutes, and if we learn...
50 minutes, very short.
We can always make another part two.
Sure.
Which I think will be very, very interesting one anyway. So yes, please, can you tell us your young years as a sportsman, as a firefighter, as a just wonderful husband also, all
right.
That, and then we will listen for you.
Well, I was born in, of course, in Poland, in Stargard-Szczeciński, and... in a family, very poor family. So, you know, we were extremely poor. So people that didn't have enough money to survive a month. So from the money that my father was earning, my father was, he didn't accept, never accepted communism. So he had a really tough 40 years of work. And when he finished his 40 years, so the communist government gave him a watch, and that was it. So I kind of watched that, and it was just, you know, my life was happening to me. I was not really watching, but I was more like aware of what my parents are. And today I can see how I benefited from my parents, who they were, what kind of integrity they had, and I became that. So I don't really much worry about my daughter, because I think that what we get from parents cannot be described with certain way of living is passed on us without, you know, teaching us anything. It just happens. What our parents is, we become. So my mother was a wonderful human being. She was very high integrity, and I got it from her. And my parents were busy to survive, to make enough money to feed us. So when I was going to school, elementary school, it was really rough. There were a lot of bullies, and I experienced a lot of that. And I got myself to a really good high school when I was 15 years old, the best high school in the city. And then something happened to me that really was rough. I didn't do my homework, and the boys that they were really toward more no homework and having good time somehow attracted me, and then I lost my grip over the progressing in the school. And then I was expelled within like 2-3 months. I couldn't go on. I think that what the stump was, I went to this Russian lesson and Russian language. And then I got 5 F's in like about 10 minutes. Everybody was laughing. And I think it was the roughest in 10 minutes for me. And then I give up after that. After when I gave into that, then I experienced a lot of drinking, more drinking, more drinking, and I hang out with street kind of gangs and became alcoholic. And I was going on like that for 3 years. Nothing, no school, no study, nothing. Just drinking and finding out where to get money during one day, right? So day by day, just alcohol blackouts and for 3 years. It was going like that. And one day I was with a group of friends, and there was another group of friends, and the other group was athletic, and they were track and field athletes and bodybuilders, powerlifters, all kind of athletes. And one of them, his mother threw his weightlifting equipment out of the house. So, of course, I was drunk already. So we were listening to his story. I said, "Well, you can bring your equipment to my house and we'll train." Well, he said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." So next day is about 3 p.m. And my window is just right on the street, right? Where people walk, you can knock to my window. So he knocks to my window. And I open the door. I was already after some beers. And I look at him and I say, "What are you doing here?" And he says, "You told me that I can bring equipment." Of course, I didn't remember anything. So I was alcoholic. So say, look at him. I said, "Well, you know, if you want, you just bring your bars and everything what you have. And then, you know, we can, I will take a nap. You can take training and we can go and have a beer." And so he brought everything. And I lay down on the couch and I say, "I take a nap." I said, no, we can do together. I said, "Together, forget about it, right? Not doing anything." And then he said, "Yeah, but we just a little bit like bench press and then we can go." And I said, "No, I'm not going to do that." Then I turned away from him. And he said, "Well, maybe we can do a little bit and go for a beer." When I had a beer, really, the idea of a beer, that struck me right away. I got focused right away on it. So I said, "Well, why not?" So We started doing the bench press, but he had to give me a very light bar because I cannot lift anything. I was very weak. And we did lifting a little bit and then went for the beer. And that's how it was, day by day, kind of drinking and lifting and drinking and lifting. And every day he was there. Just that slowly, I was getting stronger. You know, like weeks were passing and months, and I was getting stronger. And I just noticed that sometimes I didn't have blackouts and I drank less. And I like Mirek. Mirek was the guy who was pulling me out of darkness. And I like him. And I see how important it is, the mentor in your life, somebody that can help you to pull out of darkness. And when months were passing, I was drinking less and less and less. And I like that way. In about half a year, I was, you know, drinking very little. And lifting about 3-4 hours a day. I was about 19 years old at that time. And this is the time when boys go to army, or they go to the fire department. And I got myself into fire department instead of the army. And I crave really school. You know, I miss the school. I miss education. And there was this evening school that I could attend. And the fire department agreed to that. And I was going evening to the school. And during the day, I was in the fire department. And it was really hard for me to start high school, because it was 5 years after. It's the same high school, but right, just the unique school. It was really hard. And there was this guy who was a soccer player, and he knew that it's really hard for me. So he said, I will go with you. I will go first day, sit with you, and so on. I was just very anxious about that. Also ashamed of myself that, you know, 5 years I just missed. It just hit me, the message that really I missed so much. But he said that he would go sit with me. So I went. We went together in the first class, and I kind of like it to be with him. And then I went to school back, and I was really good in math and physics, chemistry. All the science was really good. Always A's. It was just that way. I didn't like much anything else, but science was really, I was really talented to that. So about maybe 3-4 weeks, I really started liking school. But going back to school was always difficult, because I had to pass the street gangs and those who were drinking, those who knew me and so on. So my friend was always there and walk with me. It's helping me to just pass. During this time, my weightlifting was picking up. I was getting stronger and faster and really like it more and more. I went to Szczecin and, you know, joined the team there. And start improving my weightlifting and becoming a really good elite weightlifter. So everything was going on. 4 years passed, and you know, after 4 years, I built enough mental strength to go to college. And of course, going to college in my situation, it was not easy. I was 24, and then I didn't have any money. My family didn't have money, and whatever I earned in fire department was not much money either. It was enough to eat. So next, what happened to me is that I decided to go to army because I was always wanted to be a pilot. A pilot was really my way. You know, dreaming about being a pilot. So Dublin was the place where I could be pilot and then a jet pilot, you know, Army, Navy. So there were about 5,000 boys tested, and I was one of the 50 that was accepted to the school. So the day came that I needed to go, and so I went up to Dublin, and I was waiting. There was a boy in front of me. It's an army, so you understand, you take the uniform and everything else. So a boy before me was checking in, taking the uniform, and the siren started everywhere, and people started really running around. And so I asked the soldier who was there, who was giving uniform, so what's going on? So he said, well, you know, two planes went down, and two officers killed and two students killed, right? So I said, really? So I said, so does it happen here often, these things, like two planes right away? So, and he said, well, we are flying on this Russian planes that they are defected, and it happens. And I was just thinking,
Well, am I
here, right? So I stood up and I said,
no,
I'm done with being pilot. Really, really I don't know. It's just like,
I didn't know this one. I read a lot about this, but this part, this is surprising for me. I would like to one more time say that today on Accent On, we have Jerzy Gregorek as our guest. His life story is very, very interesting. And I say, there will be an amazing movie. You are an accomplished athlete. You won how many world weightlifting championships? How many?
I got four masters weightlifting.
Four. And you established one world record. So yeah, I would like to say that, because I think it's amazing. You were talking about being a young boy studying in school. You were bullied, and you didn't like the school. Then your life stopped for 5 years. You were drinking. You didn't know really what to do. You really got involved with wrong crowd. And the little unusual situation and seeing on the street the weightlifting equipment made you want to try this type of a sport. You didn't know that this would be your future and a career in a way, very big one. But I just wanted to say how unusual your life story is, the little breaks. Then you decided to come back to school. You know, you're done with high school. Then you need to choose college. I didn't know that you wanted to be pilot. But then you have this choice to become a firefighter and still being a sportsman. Still, you didn't forget. You were getting better and better. So I think in a way, we are getting closer to 1981. Yes, maybe 2-3 years before.
Yeah, they 81. Well, 78 is the one, that the year that I was applying to college. So 78, I went from Dublin, I went to Ustka, to the Navy there, didn't like it either. It's a different story. And then went to the Warsaw, to the fire department, to the fire protection academy, right? And then I started in 78.
So you didn't need to go to army, because people didn't understand in Poland it was a very unusual, different system, like maybe all around the world. And
right.
Like I was saying, the 1981 is a very, very important year, not only in Polish history, I think in world history. This is when you start getting involved in solidarity movement, and you were already studying as a firefighter. So please tell us, this is like, I think for you, everything started and ended there when it comes to your life in Poland. It's the beginning and in the end. So I would like us to focus on the time that you were studying there. You were almost done with the school, and then the 1981 came, okay? And we start having Poland and in the world situation that solidarity was the movement that whole world had eyes open, ears open, and I will say till this day probably is one of the toughest moments in modern history in Eastern Europe. But hey,
the toughest and the most beautiful.
So you were part of it, and you were part of this amazing school, part of the so many students, I think around 400 students the school has. Could you tell us, what is the school, how was the studying years, and what's happened when 1981 happened, a solidarity movement was strong? How students and you were dealing with this situation in a school?
So, 78, the students were really sheltered in the Fire Protection Academy, right? So it was the civilian school, but they were pretty sheltered, focused on study. And it was 78. 78, you remember, John Paul became Pope, right? Yeah. So that was really huge news. I remember November when it happened. I think it was November. And so that was the first moment when something was happening in the school that they were afraid of something with the officers. They felt something, that the wind of goodness will start blowing in that direction, and it will be really hard for them. But I was because of my experience, I was the president of the first year, and then next year I became the president of all schools, all students, and then I was in between the communication between officers or the commandant or the rector and the students, and it was everything was okay. And then in 1980, Solidarity began, right? So summer, and then Solidarity was formed, and that was a lot of news here. And then as you know, that was the most beautiful time, because Solidarity, you know, created this possibility for people to have hope in Poland. And it was, that hope was warm, that hope was everywhere. And wherever you went in Poland, on a bus or tram or wherever you were, you could talk to anybody, and people were very friendly, and they were kind of happy that something was happening to people, that they felt like the change is coming.
So you represented students. You represented, you were a between, you were a bridge between all professors and obvious head of schools and students. So you knew that the school and situation in school is changing. You knew that the school supposed to be soon probably turned from the firefighter school into more maybe army like.
Yeah, well, that was 81, right? When 81 was it happened, and in 81, as you know, a lot of strikes happened in Poland. The Solidarity was pushing, and also students were pushing for change.
So students on a strike also, yes?
Yeah, it was just all Poland. It was, you know, strikes were everywhere. That was October, November, just from September. It was just all on strike. And in October 81, two Solidarity members invited me for the meeting. And the meeting was about that the government is planning to change the law of the school. And the school was a civilian school, and they were going to change the law so it would be paramilitary school. And that would help the government to fight demonstrations, to fight people. So, of course, we were firefighters. We were not fire people, right? People, right? We didn't want to fight people.
Yeah.
We wanted to fight fires. And that was really strong in us. So that led to the information that they passed on me. Alla Dobrovolska and Marek Surawa, they were two professors that were Solidarity members, and they passed this information. And that information I passed on students and everybody else. And that really created a lot of friction between the students and between professors and, of course, the commandant was, you know, more like an army way of dealing with problems. And because of that, every year had an officer who was kind of overlooking everything what students were doing. And part two, first and second year, lived on the campus and third and fourth, where I lived. We lived outside about 30 minutes from the campus, from the school. And at night, when the friction was really growing, one of the officers pulled out the guns and shooting in the hallway where students were sleeping. So that message traveled to us, and they said, well, let's go and see what's going on. And it was about 10 p.m. And we arrived to school. School was locked and didn't want to let us in, right? So then a lot of Solidarity members came from Ursus, and that's when Severin Ivorsky came, and, you know, Marek Hushko and other Solidarity members, and then started calling in Warsaw everywhere, Mazovsha and those who ruled the school. And finally, they achieved that. They would let us go in and see what's going on with the first and second year. So we came in, and after the short discussion, students said that they would turn our sympathetic strike, because we were already on a sympathetic strike with other students, to the strike that is full total taking over the whole university, the campus, and lockdown, right? So that the voting came in, and voting was probably almost 100% for the strike. Strike began, and that led to about 10 days of dealing with negotiations, and a lot of professors came from other universities, and that led to the friction between the government that wanted to do what they wanted to do and the whole the student and the Solidarity. Eventually, the negotiations at a certain point stop. We thought that it would be okay. They stop, and the next day they resolve the school, so the school didn't exist anymore. They passed the law that school is done.
It's not enrolled. Now, what's happened? We had like 400 students. You were almost done with the school. You had, I think, a few months.
Yeah, you graduated
school. And then no more school, no more education. 400 students probably try to find new place for themselves, or even thinking, what now? What will be doing now? What was your fear? What came to your head? And how did you even think that you, who become, like I say, the bridge between government, between school, heads of schools and the students, did you think that you lost or you won this game? Or did you see the future? Did you see what will happen to you? Any place?
When the negotiations happened, that we thought that maybe they will lean toward, because, you know, 80 was the year that Solidarity was formed, and they were not murdering us so much, right, like years before. Yeah. So it was a different approach to people that were no freedom fighters or resistance fighters, right? They just didn't take us and torture and kill. They let us kind of be, and solidarity happened. And that, you know, 10 years before, it would never happen, right? So they would simply take us down right away. But solidarity survived to 81. And now when negotiations happen, the school, when they stopped the school for existence of the school, then we knew that they're going to attack us, that we lost here. And then we were just waiting because they said that we are not students anymore. And now we are occupying a building that the building is not really ours, and we have to get out of there. But we continue our strike and, you know, waiting for the attack. Attack came December 2nd in the morning after 10 days. They landed, you know, anti-terroristic brigade on the roof, and also drove the tanks in and police forces and took us down. And, you know, they beat everybody they could on everywhere, whatever. They were very angry, very aggressive. And whoever could, we concentrated ourselves in the main hall, and where they surrounded the whole thing, and they said that we are not students anymore and that we have to live. And they simply ordered us to go home, right? And they loaded us on buses and took us to our academic. And that's where we changed. And then we go to Mazovsha. Mazovsha was the place, the Mazovsha, the headquarters of Solidarity in Warsaw, and asked Solidarity for help. And Solidarity came out with, of course, the help. They directed us to MIT, to a polytechnic school in Warsaw. That's where we continue our strike without school anymore, right? So we have 400 students. We don't have a school.
But some schools, some like polytechnics, it allow the students to come to their schools as a student or only to continue a strike?
No, we went up there and they incorporated us as students of MIT, all of us, if they we wanted. So they gave us new ideas with college or MIT. And, of course, from fourth year, I would go to the first. And that's, we were dealing at this point how to exist, how to, you know, what is our voice, simply, because we didn't have... our school anymore was brutally taken away from us. And that's it. It's like, that's what is the communism, you know. It's just they do whatever they want and then nothing happens. So what happened really in December 13, on December 13, they really attacked the whole country, right? The whole Solidarity, they arrested a lot of people, but still they didn't kill us. They didn't murder us. So that was a strange, really thing that happened in Poland at that time. They released those people that they arrested within about a month or two or five or half a year. And then it was the time that they started dealing with us, 400 that now... they lived in different places of wherever they lived, right, in Poland. And it was the time after December 13, it was the lockout, right, in Poland. You couldn't travel between the cities unless you had the permission. So there was no way that you could go anywhere. Everyone was controlled. Everyone was looked at, focus, and
they had names, they had addresses, they knew who all of the students were.
Right.
Where did you go? Because obviously, I'm sure you had fears that you will be also watched, and probably something not so good can happen to you. And I understand that you were already married by then.
Yeah, I was married. Yeah, I was 4 years already married.
Yeah, and you, like you said, you lost your school. You probably, I don't even know, you were still weightlifting, yes? You were still allowed to weightlift
My weightlifting, it was injured in 77, so that stopped my weightlifting for many years. So that was my recovery from weightlifting, right?
Yes.
And that I recovered, eventually returned to weightlifting. In the U.S., I started really competing here, and actually competed in 1997, the Masters World Championship in Warsaw.
Talking about this. This sounds a little bit complicated, but I think you are really taking us very nice.
Yeah, jumping and back and forth.
No, it's very good. We are right now almost done with 1981. We know that you feel like you probably are endangered in a way in Poland, and probably you will need to leave Poland. You were injured, you mentioned. You couldn't anymore actively being a sports personally lifting weights, and also you couldn't really move freely from town to town anyway, because all of us, we were locked in our own towns without any papers. You couldn't really move anywhere. So, and how did this happen that you decided to leave Poland? And today, well, I'm saying we have only, I think, 10 minutes. So I know that we'll be having part two with you, because I really love that we are allowing people to understand how important this probably 15, 20 years of you growing up in Poland were, how they changed you, how they made you into the human that you are today. So I know you will be leaving Poland soon. What year did you leave Poland?
You decided. So I left in 85, but I have to go to 82. 82, and then after the attack on the country and the solidarity and the country happened December 13, 81. After that, there was a lockdown. And then and so all the students are home now, and they're waiting what's going to happen. So then they started a new school for us, right, for this 400.
Yes.
And they wanted everyone would need to sign allegiance to the new school to be the part of it, to finish the study. So that created big problem for us. So a lot of students were already identified with Solidarity, and they place kind of allegiance to Solidarity and not to the government, and they were open with it. So 100 students decided not to sign the allegiance to the school that they wanted, and 300 did. So what's the difference here? The difference is huge. The 300 kind of were firemen, and they wanted to stay firemen, firefighters. And it really didn't matter for them in what kind of political system they would be. But more important was they wanted to be firefighters. Yeah. And for 100, it was not the case. For 100 was really the situation they were forcing us to be a certain way, and they didn't want to. We didn't want that. We felt like we own something to the free Poland. We own something like inspiration or motivation, whatever it is. It was not right to sign the allegiance to the communistic way of life. So we did it. Now, we in a way condemn ourselves, but at the same time, we pass the message that you can take away from us everything, but you're not going to break us. And that was very clear. And that's how it stayed for many, many years, and inspired really others to know that there are people really that they are unbroken. You cannot break us. You can kill us, but not breaking. So this 100 people gave this energy, the same as an energy like other fighters, to survive another 8 years. It was very similar to Warsaw Uprising, because Warsaw Uprising was in the situation where London government wanted them to not to do the uprising. But the leaders of in Warsaw at that time, they said very clear, if we don't do uprising, then we will give in, and we never gave in, and they will Sovietize us very easy after that. So they did the uprising, even knew that Stalin was plotting whatever he was plotting, and he was plotting to take over the Poland. But because the uprising happened, we all had this energy, this courage to stand up. They gave us this, you see, I have a goosebump on my whole body. They gave us this right to stand up and courage to stand up. And that was holding Poland all the way until 89. And we were just this small part in 81 to say the same thing. It was just this small flame that we carried within the country that was, you know, that the communist government tried to break. But we said, no, we're not going to do that with us. And we align ourselves with all others who actually did the same thing. That, because of that change that we created, we were incorporated into the underground of the Solidarity in 81. And we stayed mostly in the underground. And, you know, it's just underground. Everything was underground. And then we looked the same, like, you know, during the war was underground too. So it was the same way. And the story goes between in 81, 82, like I become connected to the Church of Stanisław Kostki with Popiełuszko, and mostly my meetings are there. And I'm connected to Radio Solidarity, buying and selling cassettes. And the cassettes were, you know, at that time, we used to tape Bujaks on Wałęsa speeches and send to people. It was really really hard to do, because in Poland there was very difficult to get this cassette. So I was traveling between the cities with 500 cassettes, and it was, of course, you know, dangerous task. But everything was kind of dangerous at that time. But and then it came to the time of 84 when Popiełuszko was captured and
I think tortured and murdered. We have 5 minutes to close this chapter in your life before you, in 1986, you were leaving Poland. You decide to leave Poland with your wife. But I think these 4 years that you are saying that you were working underground, working with Solidarity and saying, dealing with lots of messages, sending back and forth to people about a situation that is in our country, in Poland. But there was one very important priest that you are mentioning name a few times already in our interview, and we had Popiełuszko. His name was Popiełuszko.
Right.
Tell us a little bit, like I said, we have 4 minutes before end of the show, and why this priest was so important part of Solidarity movement, especially in Poland.
First of all, yeah, people needed really sermons that they would feel the hope and also power, and people that would love them, right? So Popiełuszko was an amazing human being. You know, if you were around him, we just feel right away energy of goodness, like pure goodness. It was impossible to have anywhere else. I've never really encountered a human being like that in my life. I thought that these people do not exist, that unconditional love doesn't exist. And here, you know, we are on the strike, and Popiełuszko is one of those people that came to help to give the sermon to these 400 students to to help them with fears and to help them with, you know, whatever they were going through. And he was actually, because the police surrounded the whole academy, he was pulled in, through the window into the building. And that's where I met first time Popiełuszko. He came to help you know, those 400 students to deal with depression, with fears, with anxieties. And then every day he would give a sermon and he would help us.
He was a young priest, but also I think we need to mention that a few years later he was murdered. He was killed.
He was an amazing voice. People loved him. People felt, you know, the courage that was coming from him, energy that was beautiful. And it was so lovable that the communists hated that they just hated him for the words that he was speaking. It was too uplifting for the society at that time for them. They just, you know, and they hated him so much that they captured him and tortured him.
He died. They killed him. So today, again, we are talking to Jerzy Gregorek. We are listening to your amazing life story. You are right now, or we are talking about 1980. We are coming closer to 1986. So we close this chapter right now. You are telling us your story.
Right.
And I know that you feel like you need to leave Poland. And this is a part one of our interview with Jerzy Gregorek, because after what's happened in your life, it's even more, I don't want to say amazing, but really uplifting. And you turn your life into successful, very successful life story, and sports is coming back to you, and you have awards, you are writing poems, you are just man of so many talents. And I would love to also talking about the happy body. This is something that, about your coaching part of life and career. All of that will be talking in part two interview with Jerzy Gregorek. But, you know, before I will say bye to you for today, I would like to read something that your wife wrote and talked on a website. She says, whenever we are going through difficult time, I often ask Jerzy if he regrets any decisions he made in the past. And he always says, no, it made me into the man I am today. He is a man of principle and ethics and carries a strong sense of what's right or wrong and sticks with his commitments. So I think your wife and your life story just describe beautifully why you both are happy for so many years and are together. Because I know that your life story, end of life in Poland and then going through Europe to America in the future, is intertwined with your wife life story too, because she also weightlifts. So it's just amazing, amazing, amazing story. And then, like I said, we'll be talking about program that you created, very, very special. You developed a happy body, and you are taking care of people who want to lose weight, want to come back to look like you. And I don't want to say how old are you, but you look amazing. So I hope people will be tuning in to part two, our interview, and we'll find out how you turned your life on another continent and make life so successful that I'm talking to you in San Francisco. I thought that you are in your home in Los Angeles, but hey, we have something to talk about for today. So Jerzy, thank you for today.
Yeah, fantastic. You're welcome. You know, I look forward to talking about the second part.
I cannot wait. So thank you for today. Say hi to your wife and to your daughter, Natalie. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ilona. Bye-bye.
I'll keep my faith.
You're listening to Accent On with Ilona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.